Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Province Sports Podcast.
Welcome to the Whitetail Podcast. We are going to talk Canucks. We'll talk Stanley Cup and we'll, you know, torque the relationship to the Canucks. I'm here with, joined by Ed Willis. Also talk a little bit of Raptors, Toronto sports, maybe even some other local sports, Lions, and the local landscape thrown in there. NHL draft on the horizon as well. As always, you can listen to us. Well, you're listening to us right now, but you can subscribe through Apple Podcasts. Please do so. Give us a rating. Let us know what you like, what you don't like. Ed, speaking of what we like and what we don't like, before we get into looking at, you know, the teams and the way they're constructed and how far the Canucks are away, which should interest most people, how the holy F does Boston have the World Series champion, the Super Bowl champion, and look poised to add the Stanley Cup to it? I mean, the only thing close to it that I can recall is the Pirates and Steelers in the late 70s. Wow. But other than that, like, I can't imagine another market sort of having two current dominant teams, let alone three.
Yeah, you know, and the great part about that is, like, just for those short 86 years, Boston prided itself on being the city that couldn't win. It was as much a part of its identity as clam chowder. You know, the Red Sox curse and the curse of the Bambino and woe was us, and they wore that proudly. And I'm not sure what the turning point, I mean, can we all point to this, to Tom Brady? The moment Tom Brady was drafted by the Patriots and emerged as, like, the greatest quarterback of all time, I think that's where it starts, because it's 0-1. They win the first Super Bowl in 0-1, right?
Yeah.
Red Sox break the curse in 0-4. Bruins win in 11. Who am I missing? Celtics had a championship.
Yeah,
they had that one weirdo with the Paul Pierce team and all the rest of it.
It puzzles me a little bit. The hatred, I guess just the emotion out of that 2011 Stanley Cup final. We've had finals since. I mean, Boston had been there and lost in the meantime, but there seems to have been no matchup which has left a scar like that one in 2011. The disdain for the Bruins, maybe it's Marchand, maybe it's Chara, maybe it's the fact that this city hasn't had, that was its best chance and hasn't had a sniff since, or really, I mean, you can go back to 94 prior to that, but what is it about the Bruins that it just seems to have left such a lasting impression on this market, at least?
Oh, I think 90% of it's Marchand. He's just like, see, if he was like a professional wrestler, he'd be the greatest heel of all time. And that's it. And I think, you know, he was kind of center stage in a lot of the stuff with Vancouver. But, you know, you think of Toronto, you think about him licking Leo Komarov on their face, which again is so. And then you think of the Andy Sissy. I'm a little encouraged that at least we're not alone anymore. There are other, we hate Boston club has grown a bit. We can now welcome our good friends in Toronto. We'll get to them a little later, I'm sure. Carolina kind of feels the way. And then, you know, Montreal, that's only been going on for like 40 years. So there's that. There is something, like, I was watching that game. And I remember having a conversation, and I think it was with the Toronto Series, and I can't remember what it was, but I was having a conversation with somebody. He said, you know, here's the thing about conspiracy theories and Boston. I don't necessarily buy them, but you can easily construct a case where you can make a believable conspiracy case just for the calls they make. And that game last night, okay, the Blues are up 2-0. They take four straight penalties, two of which were highly, highly questionable. To me, that's what turned that game around. Now, full credit to the Bruins. They took advantage, and they just steamrolled them over the last half of the game. But Blues are up 2-0 on the road. They can play a shutdown game as well as anybody. And like I said, four straight penalties in the Stanley Cup final, two of which the call on Edmondson, and I can't remember who got the slashing call for a little, you know, like tap on the wrist. That's what did it. And the McAvoy goal, and like I put that one on Bennington, but the McAvoy goal was the key point in the game because they'd actually shut them down on the power play to that, and it's late in the power play, and McAvoy, who was like, again, a guy that Canucks missed out on, but that goal changed the whole complexion of the game for me.
It's, you know, it's an interesting question. I think that when you look at teams that seem to have influence, I mean, obviously when the Canucks were involved, there was the whole Colin Campbell debacle, to say nothing other than, you know, a current player on a team's dad is pretty much the second most powerful man in the NHL. The allegations of sort of power brokers in the ownership group has hung around the NHL for a long time. Publicly, there's not a lot said, but hockey media talks about it. Jeremy Jacobs is one of them. I mean, Lord knows the Canucks owner only seems to exert his influence over the need to get ride sharing in this province, which he did again this morning.
Yes.
It's getting somewhat embarrassing, to be honest with you. But, you know, we don't see the owner in Vancouver come out and scream that they don't get the breaks. It's that they all play good cop. Yet we hear about the Snyder family. We hear about what happens. You know, Chicago is one of them. Montreal, back perhaps day, Toronto, sure. Jacobs is one of them. Is there anything to that, or is this just a myth?
Yeah, it's like the optics of it. But again, you just kind of look at the way things break, and it kind of tends to point one way, and Boston does get a disproportionate amount of breaks, in my opinion. Couldn't sit down and prove it empirically, but I just think of the events over the last couple of years. And time again, the scales of justice have tipped toward the Boston side of things. I think this is a fascinating series because, you know, the other part of it is, for me, they've kind of flipped characters from 2011. Like, Boston is now kind of more the speed skill team. Now, they've got Chara in the lineup, and that changes the equation a bit. But by and large, they are the speed and skill team, which will require the referees to call it tight. And if they call it tight, and if they continue to get, you know, the run on the power play, this is going to be a very short series. St. Louis, on the other hand, the bigger, heavier team, plays a more physical brand. They want the game called loose. I think the way the game's going to be called is going to be a huge determining factor in this series. Like, right after who has the best goalie, it might be the second most important thing. So I think that's going to bear watching here as this thing unfolds.
When you look at St. Louis, I mean, are they a Cinderella team where something like what happened last night could be the clock striking midnight? Or are they, look, it was the first game. They had a lead. They've had some adversity in these playoffs already, and they have come back from it. They seem unflappable in a way. I know they're game down, but what do you think their odds are?
Fine. I still think it's going to come down to, I look at Tuukka Rask versus Binnington, and I think that is ultimately Boston's ace in the hole. I think that's what it comes down to. But I would say this about St. Louis. They're a Cinderella team just in terms of this year. Like, who would have thought a team that was, like, last in the NHL in December would make this kind of move? But the fact is, the Blues have been there or thereabouts at this incarnation of the team and this group of players for the better part of 5 years. They've kind of been San Jose of the Midwest. They just couldn't get it done.
Is that a tag you want to have?
No, it isn't. But very similar, you know, impressive teams. You look at them and go, oh, geez, break here, break there. I can see them winning the whole thing. And it seemed like the shelf life had passed, but here they are now. And again, I think the other instructive point for Canucks fans is you look at these two teams, and they're not built on lottery picks. They're not. They're just built on like really good hockey decisions made across the board, whether it's in draft, whether it's in free agency, whether it's in trades, whether it's college free agency, two really sharp organizations. And I think that's a lesson there for Canucks
fans. Trading Louis Erickson for Milan Lucic isn't exactly how these teams have got to where they are.
You know what? I can see that, though. That makes so much sense. Lucic was their first target in that free agency season. He turned them down because he had a chance to play with Connor McDavid, and he didn't like the idea of coming home. He didn't like the idea of having that bullseye on his back. I think the way things have gone now, they cheerfully do that trade, and guys would move on. But I don't think it would have much of an impact on the Canucks lineup for next season. But that's a trade that would be easy to sell in this market.
Lots of hockey insiders coming out over the last 2 days saying they believe these talks had taken place at some point. But if you look at St. Louis and Boston, Ed, it's so dumb to say which model would the Canucks be closer to, but which one do they more closely fit? Only because I think you can then make an argument for a path to the Stanley Cup. I mean, ultimately, I still think a team like Tampa is going to come back next year. And, Calgary, there's many other teams that are fell this year that are still going to be strong. But if you look at what the Canucks have, are they closer to what Boston is or closer to what St.
Louis
is?
The analogy is far from perfect, but I would say Boston. And just in terms of this, I think the Canucks have identified their pillar pieces. And the other great thing about, that 2011 comparison is, the star players are largely the same for Boston. It's still Bergeron. It's still Marchand. It's still Krejci. It's still Chara.
There,
Even though it wasn't Thomas then. The difference is, they've rebuilt the blue line, adding McAvoy and Krug and the other guy whose name escapes me now, of course.
Bobby Orr.
Brandon Carlo,
yes.
Thank you.
Brandon Carlo, okay. Yeah.
No, good player. If he's your fourth best defenseman, you've got a really good team. So you have those four kind of foundational pieces in place. You can build around them, and you can almost burn through a half generation, which is what the Bruins have done here, almost a full generation, turned over their team. And it's remarkable to me. They have built a championship-caliber team just by really building an incredible bottom half of their lineup. Because that's what separates this Boston team is the depth and the production they get from the third and fourth line. And there's not a lot of lottery picks in there. In fact, I'm not sure if there's a first round. Charlie Coyle was, but he was in a trade acquisition.
Well, this is the weird thing about them, Ed, is they had that weird draft where they had three picks in a row, and none of those panned out.
No, they got Jake DeBrusk, who's a really good player. Yeah. But no, you're right. You would think for them to turn it around, they'd have to hit at least ground rule doubles on three of those picks. But no, they didn't. But you look at so the second rounders, and this absolutely kills me. The second rounders on that team are Bergeron, Carlo, Pasternak, right? He was in the 20s, the first rounder. Somebody else the Canucks missed on. Great, great player. Marchand was wherever he was picked, third or fourth round, things like that. So again, it doesn't necessarily follow that you have to build your team around lottery picks. If your organization is sound enough and you're making good hockey decisions across the board and, in the three, four ways, avenues. Look at the college free agents. They get Torrey Krug.
Yeah.
Who's really a top pair defenseman on any team in the NHL. That cost him some money in college free agency. The Akari kid is another one. Again, it's using all the tools in the organizational toolbox to build a team, and that's what should be the lesson for the Canucks.
Well, maybe the lesson is that the genius in the Boston front office were the people working for Jim Benning and Peter Chiarelli, not necessarily those two.
Isn't that amazing?
It is.
Isn't that crazy. I'm sorry, David Krejci is the other second rounder. We need a time delay on these podcasts. It's kind of the old man rule. I need 5 minutes to come up with some of the names I used to be able
What's
to recall
his name?
Like this. You know, that guy, not that guy, the other guy next to that guy whose name I don't remember either.
I will make the Toronto transition now. I was speaking with the Post Media sports editor, Bill Pierce, on the weekend, and he said that he woke up in a cold sweat thinking that, you know, if the Leafs get the job done with the Bruins in Game 7, that you're probably looking at a Raptors and a Leafs team in the final. Because really, Boston strolled through. I know you can't take anything for granted, but really, their toughest test was the Leafs. And if you're Toronto, you probably do have what ifs. In the meantime, they're consumed by the Raptors. And I find this hilarious. We're now in this debate about how enraptured with the Raptors we should be and whether they're Canada's national team or not. I don't know. For me personally, I went through this with the Blue Jays. I had been an Expos fan.
Mm-hmm.
So I found the notion that I had to cheer for the Blue Jays because they were Canadian to be frankly nauseating. And I find the same thing with the Raptors. I've always liked the NBA. I grew up a Lakers fan during the Magic Showtime era. I've always been partial to the Lakers. I actually really liked the Warriors during the when Chris Webber went there because I was a big college basketball fan and I liked the Fab Five. So, you know, now this idea that I have to cheer for the Raptors is asinine. I think there's a lot of local Blazers fans. There's still a lot of residual Suns fans, as bad as they've been, but Steve Nash created a huge following. People used to see Suns gear all over the city. So I just think it's great that people are interested in the NBA, but please don't tell me that I have to cheer for the Raptors.
No, and I think for me it's the two parts of one of our great national debates, and I think it's okay to cheer for the Raptors, to jump on the bandwagon, and it's still okay to take the piss out of Toronto, because those are the two great things Canadians do. We're great bandwagon jumpers, and we just enjoy mocking Toronto to no end, and for really good reason, too. And I think this whole debate just kind of shines a light on a lot of those reasons, right? The presumption that the rest of Canada, per force, must march in lockstep behind Toronto to support this fantastic Toronto entity. I remember having this line, like, they should really alter the motto of the team from "We the North" to "We the North York." Not bad.
Yeah, that
landed with a thought, as most of them do. But it's a cool story. It's fully deserving of a lot of admiration. Love the way they play. Like so many elements of the team, from the GM to the star to the way they've kind of built this to the way they play. But anything beyond that, it kind of strikes at this national obsession we have with Toronto. And it goes both ways. The Toronto's kind of sense of self-importance, you know,
that's
reflected
part of it,
on the rest of the country versus the rest of the country's disdain for Toronto.
That's part of it. But to me, a big part of it, and it was exactly the same when the Blue Jays were in the playoffs a couple of years ago. This is Sportsnet and TSN doing the damage.
Fair
it's
enough.
Not the fans or the people in Toronto. I made this point before. ESPN's a little bit of an anomaly because they're hived off in Connecticut. But if you look at like NBC Sports Network or CBS or these New York-bound national sports entities, they don't force New York teams down your throat.
Which is a good thing.
That's a great thing.
Looking at the way most of those New York teams have gone.
But even
the
when
last
they're good,
while.
Even when the Yankees, I mean, look, there's no doubt they get a lot of coverage because it's a big market, but it's not like everyone, like the video of the Sportsnet control room going crazy when the shot went in, to me is asinine. And I know there's different standards of journalism for broadcasting than there are for print, but I find it to be quite repugnant. I've said this before, Sky or BT or the English networks, you know, they are not attached to Chelsea or Arsenal. Or now, the caveat I've seen is, well, the Jays are the only team in Canada, or the Raptors are the only team in Canada in their sports. If you only had one American team or you only had one English team, then maybe you'd see that. But I still don't think it applies, because we get the same thing with the Leafs. And even we got it with TFC when they were in there. I just think the networks need to realize they're national and they're not local. And I don't know of another example where it exists. And that's more what pisses me off than the Raptors. I mean, the Raptors are a fine team. They've got players you want to cheer for. They play an exciting brand of basketball. They're a good story. But I don't like the Canadian coverage. I give me Shaq and Charles and Ernie Johnson any day over the clowns we have on Canadian TV. That's my issue, and that's my rant.
Well, it's almost like an Olympics or a World Cup where it is so skewed toward the national team or whoever's wearing the national colors. You're talking about the Blue Jays there, and I think this is the difference. At least there's a frickin' history involved with the Blue Jays that goes back 40-some years. And, you know, people went through, you know, their rise in the 80s and the World Series teams games in 92 and 93. So I can tolerate that a little more. So I understand, you know, when the Blue Jays did, you know, make that great leap forward 3-4 years ago, they were tapping into something which already existed at least. I think the other part of this, for me anyways, somebody who still kind of mourns the loss of the Grizzlies, not for what they were, but for what they might have been.
Yeah.
I mean, to shove the Raptors down our throats in this market, that is really, that's beyond the pale. That is so, you know, kind of insensitive isn't the word, but it just doesn't take into account what happened here. And that's what I found myself, I wrote about that then, you know, on Monday. I found myself thinking about that. And every now and then something just kind of flashes across your radar and you think, could it have worked here? Might it have worked here? If this would have happened, if that would have happened. And I still maintain it would have, but, you know, we'll never know because we never had a chance to prove it.
What often gets glossed over there too is, you know, Seattle. I mean, many of us who are older, I was a Sonics fan long before the Grizzlies arrived here.
Yeah.
And they used to hold, I remember seeing Magic Johnson play for the first time at the Pacific Coliseum against the Sonics. And then you think, well, Kevin Durant, he should have been playing for the Sonics before they even moved to Oklahoma. And so I can see why local basketball fans would be upset, but that doesn't, I find it so cool. Saturday, both last Tuesday and on Saturday, I live just off Main Street in Vancouver. The place is teeming with basketball fans and Raptors fans. I don't begrudge people who have grown up and they are.
But you don't think those people would show up for a Vancouver NBA franchise?
Of course
I think the way the demographics have gone in our city, it is a huge game in Asia. Massive. And, you know, like, the business of the NBA is different with the TV dollars. You don't have to sell out. I remember one of the great things is Michael Heisley actually would have lost less money with the Grizzlies in Vancouver than he did in Memphis over the length of his ownership there. So, I think it could have worked, and I know the NBA still regarded that as like, because it had this perfect attendance record, right? It was the bulletproof league, the league that didn't make any screw-ups with franchises and things like that, and that is the one kind of scar on David Stern's record, and it bothered him. I know it bothered him.
Well, we said it was a regret, and then Adam Silver recently said, we're not in expansion mode, but I would love to see a team in Vancouver, so who knows? Have you heard anything from the ownership group here? There's always this feeling that, well, a second tenant really helps line the pockets, the corporate support,
well,
all those things. Some people say
they've got the Overwatch League, right? So what do they need?
There's only 2 years until they play their first home game here. But I have no doubts that when they do, it will be sold out. That's the funny thing. We can laugh at all we want. But do you think there's a desire on the local ownership group to explore having a team?
I think there's a desire. I just don't see the reality matching that desire. I might be wrong. I know Francesco's kicked the tires on the Whitecaps from time to time, and that makes more sense to me than going for an NBA team. And again, the NBA represents, you know, it's like Oz, it's like the Emerald City, it's like this jewel. You know, and if you could get that and add that to your empire, boy, now you've really got something. So I think in those terms, yes, it is. I just think, all the levers you'd have to pull to get there, I'm just not sure if those are available.
The big debate, of course, as you say, it's not all about selling tickets, and it's not. Certainly TV contracts, which I think you'd be in a healthy shape. But the big nail in the Grizzlies' coffin when they were here was corporate support. And there's always this argument, does it bring more corporate support in or does it split it? And, there's no doubt of the Canucks' place in this market. That's not changing. You just had to see the fact that the draft sold out in about 3.5 minutes. That's not going anywhere. But you do wonder if there are enough corporate dollars in this city for another entity like that. So.
Yeah, you do, but I'm not sure how big a part of the equation corporate dollars are, especially in the Vancouver of 2019 versus the Vancouver of 1999. Somebody should do a song about that, something about 1999. It just, the way it rolls off the tongue. In 20 years, no, I just think like the demographics.
Neither North York, right?
The demographics and where the money comes from, and I say I think it's just changed so much, And I think they really would be tapping into something here with an NBA team.
One of the things that's a downside about the NBA is, and I will say this is, first of all, let me be clear. I hope Golden State wins the championship because I think that franchise, as a the way they've put those pieces together, is fascinating. And then I think you're going to see that team break up a little bit with Durant going his own way, maybe Thompson as well. But I hope that happens, and I hope Kawhi leaves Toronto, just because I think, if, especially with these bandwagon fans, what's happened in Toronto is fascinating. That you had this team with Lowry and DeRozan and a very strong support group around them. And you were tired of LeBron stuffing you in a locker. But LeBron leaves the East and you decide you want to change your team. So you trade for this superstar, but he only has 1 year left on his contract. So the big issue here is whether he's been swayed enough by the experience to want to stay in Toronto, or whether he's going to go and be another part of this kind of super group thing. That would be my fear with a team in Vancouver is, do you get to a point where you just can't attract star talent here? I think even with the Whitecaps, we see it, Ed. Whether that's the model they want to follow or not, they have an almost impossible task of convincing a big enough star that would actually sell some tickets to come here. And that was an issue with the NBA when they were here, and I think it would continue to be.
Yeah, it's true. And it's not like we're not, you know, the memories of Steve Francis and Mike Bibby being drafted are
fresh. I had flashbacks
to
that. Zion Williamson refused to put on a New Orleans cap after.
Yeah.
Well, he hasn't actually been drafted yet, but I had flashbacks to Steve Francis.
Again, I want to believe our world has changed and, you know, basketball players are a little more worldly. I think there's a lot more international players. Now, I think you'd have to be very careful about how you structured your team. And I think you'd have to look to Europe more for players and not necessarily to the NCAA.
Find the next Andrea Bargnani.
Yeah, or maybe, and here's a thought, the next Steve Nash. This fascinated me, and I heard this. I don't know if it was that much of a revelation to anybody who's been paying attention, but after the United States, Canada has the most NBA players per nationality in the NBA.
Yeah,
it's changed,
lately,
and that's, I think you can almost draw a straight line of the Steve Nash effect to all those players.
And the
Raptors, Canadian players.
Around.
And the Raptors and the Grizzlies for the 3 years we were.
No, but still, you look at, I mean, R.J. Barrett's coming out this year. Obviously, we've had number
there
one
was,
picks
yeah,
in the past,
No, it was like, and I hate to be the old guy, but, you know, I am the old guy, so what the hell. But basketball, like the NBA was such an exotic league and entity during the 60s and 70s and 80s. And when you got these games, it was just, you know, there wasn't like this proliferation of cable coverage and saturation broadcasting. It was just this really rare thing to see. But, you know, just think of the way the game has changed now, and you can watch virtually every NBA game every night of the season if you so desire. So it's not that thing, and Vancouver isn't that place. It was the Grizzlies' first year, 96?
Yeah.
So again, that's changed. Whether it's changed enough to have this team, it's an interesting conversation. I think it's really interesting to have this conversation. I'm not sure if it's anything more than that, though.
Yeah, it's and the world is so global now. It's so, as we've seen, like this local Raptor support. One last thing on that before we wrap up. There is this debate, and of course now we're talking about doing a news story on this, about the level of support for the Raptors in Vancouver, and they're talking about a public, like one of the city councils come forward with having a public viewing party. And I recall the fact that they raised the 12 flag at the city hall for the Seahawks in the Super Bowl. Can you think of another city that actually formalizes
that was a good idea.
Support for other like franchises from other cities? It just seems odd. Like, I know that there's a ton of Buffalo Bills season ticket holders from Toronto. I can't see them raising, like, having the Bills Mafia presence in Toronto City Hall, or, I can't see a public viewing party in Toronto for the Canucks and the Stanley Cup. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Who would think this is a good idea? Who would, you know, like piece together, like, our history with the NBA, our hatred of Toronto, all those factors involved in this, and think, no, this is what we have to do now. We need a big public space paid for by the taxpayer to police and have security, and we will dedicate that space so we can watch Toronto Raptors games here. Are you freaking kidding me? I love this city. I
it
really
is.
Do.
It's fantastic.
Not for the reasons you should love. I love it for the reasons you should love. I love it for other reasons too. And that's one of them. That is the biggest screwball idea I've ever heard.
Ed, thanks for joining me. Thanks for listening. You can, as I said, download through Apple Podcasts, give us a rating. We'll certainly be back pre-draft to talk more Canucks, focusing. We have just finalizing our pre-draft plans now. With the draft being here, obviously, there's going to be a lot of hockey media. Maybe we'll even have some guests. So thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be back soon.